Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's good morning, actually. We're doing the show live on Sunday morning, a special time because of the AFC and NFC title games. My name's Eric Fisher. With me, Gordon Glantz and Ron Ofer. Josh Landsberg should be along shortly. And here we are in snowy Delaware Valley today. So hopefully you're listening to the show because you're not out shoveling or you're taking a break from shoveling. A bunch of stuff to talk about today. Eagles, Flyers, Sixers, definitely. Let's start, though, with the championship games, AFC and NFC. But let's start with the Eagles. Jeff Lurie, they had the news conference this week to introduce Doug Peterson, officially introduce him as head coach. And Jeff Lurie had a lot of interesting things to say. And one was sort of a response to the criticism of the coaching search, saying, basically, hey, there's a lot of stuff we can't reveal to people. And he talked about how they had they actually started the search during the season while Kelly was still the coach, and prepared these voluminous binders of information and had 25 coaches on the list and cut it down to 10 and then cut it to 6. And then Doug Peterson was the guy they really wanted. Gordon, I guess which parts of that do you believe and which parts don't you believe and which parts don't even matter?
At the end, it doesn't matter because Doug Peterson's the coach, and like I wrote, I mean, we have to just give Doug a chance, you know. But I believe all of it. I mean, I wrote a column after those back-to-back debacles, you know, the blowout losses to Tampa Bay and Detroit. You know, that point in the season when they worked their way up to 4-4, and we thought they would get to 7-4 against Miami, Detroit, and Tampa Bay, and they actually wasn't in an order. It was Miami, Tampa Bay, and then Detroit, and they lost all three. And then the last two were embarrassing fashion. I mean, if you are an owner of a team and don't start thinking ahead, you know, it was clear the team quit on them at that point. And you really had to start thinking, is this thing just falling apart before our eyes? You know, just because it was a weak division, they still had sort of a glimmer of hope, you know, until they lost the key game to the Redskins. But, you know, I think that's just due diligence. I mean, if they managed to sneak into the playoffs somehow, I mean, maybe it wouldn't have happened, but I think it's just due diligence compiling the list. And then, you know, I think some of my instincts, you know, he kind of hinted that there were some coaches that, you know, were on the list and probably pretty high on the list that if they were fired, and I think Harbaugh and Baltimore may have been the top of that list. That was always my gut feeling. Or you know, college coaches. He said he wouldn't rule out the college route. And I think David Shaw, Stanford, the coach at Texas A&M, I think those guys were possibilities as well. But those are guys he can never interview. So, you know, that kind of left, you know, who we saw, and they gave Shermer the interview he deserved for being the interim coach. And Deuce Staley, you know, was an interview for whatever reasons you want to attach to it. And then, you know, they kind of, you know, we know what happened with the other four. I believe it. I really do. I think it was just due diligence. And he said later in the season, but I think it had to have started during that middle part of the season when they just were getting annihilated against teams that they should have beaten. And if they lost to, they should have lost to in close games, not in absolute massacres. So, do I not buy it? I think it was due diligence, and I don't fault them at all.
Okay, thank you. Ron, Doug Peterson seemed to be okay with not being the first guy, necessarily the first choice. As Gordon said, it doesn't really matter. It matters that he's the coach, and that's kind of what Doug Peterson said. And yet Lurie then had to, right after that, jump in with a long, detailed, impassioned defense of the process, and also saying, making a point that Peterson was the only one they offered a contract to. And I guess my question for you is, if Doug Peterson's okay with not being the first choice, as long as he got the job, well, why isn't that enough for Jeff Lurie? Why did he have to be so defensive about that? Oh, Ron, are you with us? Ron, if you're talking, I can't hear you, so maybe call right back. Okay, Gordon, let's go that quick question back to you then.
Right.
Why the impassioned defense by Lurie and you know, stressed that he was the only one who was offered the job if Peterson was okay with not being the first choice?
I think it could be the case of over-talking. He just is trying to make sure everything is out there because you hear, you know, people's imaginations run away with them with between talk radio and the Twitter universe and everything else. So he just wanted to lay as many cards on the table as he possibly could, or spin it the way he could. You know, but I think the thing we need to say about Doug Peterson, if they were not 100% satisfied with him, they would have kept looking for people. I mean, if he wasn't the last choice in the whole universe of people who can coach an NFL football team, there were other guys out there, and he could have easily opened it up back up again, and you know, maybe brought Peterson for a second interview, but also interviewed a couple other people as sort of a second tier, a second round go round. And he even said that. He said instead of going to the second tier, he decided to stick with the first tier, and he may have said that during that impassioned plea that you're talking about. But you know, I think he felt good with Peterson, and that's why he didn't start with the Lovie Smiths and some of those other guys. So
Ron's back with us. Let's give Ron back a shot. Ron, question: why was Jeffrey Lurie so defensive about Peterson not being saying he's the only one we offered a contract to, and he's the guy we wanted, if Peterson was okay with, you know, being a second, third, fourth choice?
Well, first I should ask if you can hear me okay.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. I can't easily answer that question, Eric. I can only surmise that this goes back to me, if you want me to psychoanalyze Jeffrey Lurie, whether you want me to or not, this guy does not seem to understand or feel like he belongs among the pantheon of NFL ownership. You would not be hearing Jerry Jones start rattling off all that Jeffrey Lurie rattled off, or any other owner that seems to have probably an abundance of confidence in himself. And I really don't understand why Jeffrey Lurie had to share. He claimed to not be needing to share everything, and yet he shared more than I would have expected. And I don't know that it helped the organization in any way for him to do so. If anything, he was really trying to give Chip Kelly another kick in the rear end that, you know, we were about to fire him mid-season. We were already planning to. You know, he was gone anyway. We were already working on it. That's all I could draw.
Yeah, it's interesting logic. And you know, and Ron, it goes with, I didn't get into the psychological analysis like you just did, but I'm glad you did, though. But I pointed that out in my column this week. I was like, I don't care how many pages the binders were on all these candidates. You know, what I'm looking at is the end result, and, you know, I'm not sure they got the best coach. And, again, we could put Doug Peterson time, but I'm not sure we got the best coach, which Josh Landsberg is with us now. Josh, that brings us to the next thing. Doug Peterson, one of the things he revealed during the news conference was that he was the guy who called the plays in the second half of the Chiefs game against the Patriots, the playoff game. Then he said, as Andy Reid did, although Andy Reid didn't reveal that Peterson was the one making the calls, Peterson said, you know, he gave an explanation for the lack of urgency and not using the timeouts, and had to do with keeping Tom Brady off the field. And my question is, how does that make you feel as a head coach, as Doug Peterson is the head coach, to hear that explanation of those final few minutes of the Chiefs-Patriots game, that he was the guy in charge of the play calling?
Not very good, Eric. I mean, I think that if Andy Reid was the one in charge, then you'd feel a little bit better about it, then maybe Doug Peterson could do something different. But, you know, Doug Peterson comes from under Andy Reid, and clock management, time management was something that was a problem for Andy Reid here in Philadelphia, and it was a problem in that Chiefs-Patriots game. Just the explanation didn't make any sense. You don't want to give Tom Brady the ball back. Well, you had to give him the ball back. You had to score twice. You had to have the urgency. You had to score in that situation much quicker than they did. They got down to the one-yard line, and they wasted a lot of time, and they weren't able to get the ball in quick enough, and they had to score twice. The explanation just didn't make any sense to me. So, and the fact that Doug Peterson was the one calling the plays doesn't exude the most amount of confidence in me that if he's going to be the one calling the plays here in Philadelphia, then, you know, now maybe it'll be the offensive coordinator, maybe it'll be someone else, who knows. But that really kind of upsets me, that the fact that he was the one calling the plays down the stretch.
Yeah, good point,
Eric,
Josh.
If I can jump in for a second, it really doesn't make any sense unless Andy Reid ordered that, because it's not for the offensive coordinator to determine the overall strategy of the game and whether he doesn't trust the defense to hold Tom Brady at bay. That's not Doug Peterson's job as offensive coordinator in Kansas City. It makes no sense what he said.
A lot of it didn't make any sense. Andy Reid's explanation, by the way, didn't make much sense either, talking about saving timeouts. Unless he thought they could go to overtime and use timeouts in overtime, I don't know what he was thinking. Gordon, they assembled the staff, and, you know, we don't want to go through all the entire staff, but there are three parts that I found really interesting. It's the coordinators. You know, you got Frank Wright coming in, even though Doug Peterson's going to call the plays, which is why the last question to Josh was relevant. You got Jim Schwartz coming in as defensive coordinator, and you have seven holdovers from Chip Kelly's staff. You know, what do you think of the two coordinators, and how unusual is it to have seven holdovers from a previous coach's staff?
I think it's slightly unusual, to answer your last question first, unless it's a team where, you know, they've been really successful and the coach is retired and they're just kind of maybe promoting from within and they just kind of keep, you know, some people move up and maybe a few people leave. But other than that, when you see a coaching change, you don't see it that much. But I think it is smart to keep a guy like Dave Phipp on board. I mean, he's the Eagles special teams have pretty much bailed them out the last couple of years and probably have won some games for them. So I was really glad to see him stay, and I'm sure Chip Kelly would have loved to have brought him with to San Francisco. You know, if this is to me was, you know, Doug Peterson's, I was largely, I guess, nonplussed by his press conference. It was okay. He didn't really blow me away with anything he said. It was just sort of a lot of coach speak. But I thought, you know, this is his first coaching move, which is assembling his staff. And I think he did a good job. I really feel good about the staff that he assembled. It showed what some guys don't do, including what Chip Kelly's doing in San Francisco. It showed a lack of ego. He has two coordinators, the offensive coordinator. He has two guys on the offensive side of the ball who were offensive coordinators last year, you know, Frank Reich and DeFilippo, who's going to be the quarterback's coach, was the offensive coordinator in Cleveland last year. So he has two offensive coordinators from last year, plus himself, so that's three. So he's not going to feel, you know, some people would feel threatened, but he's not. And he has a former head coach for, you know, an appreciable amount of time, 5-6 years, Jim Schwartz, and a very successful defensive coordinator, you know, around that coaching stint. So, you know, he doesn't seem to feel threatened by anybody. He just wants to win. He wants to get the best staff together that he can. And if that's his first coaching move, to put his staff together and also to just to be open to, I don't know how much some of the holdovers were forced on him, but to be open to, you know, keeping some guys over, you know, I feel good about the staff. And, you know, I still don't know. Well, Greg Lewis, you know, Greg Lewis is one of my least favorite Eagles of all time, but he has been coaching for about 5 years, and he's a wide receivers coach, and maybe he can do something about the drops. But yeah, I mean, overall, I feel good about the staff. I can't really say anything negative about what he put together and the holdovers that they kept. I mean, they probably were the guys I would have kept. So I really can't say anything negative about. What's that?
Receivers couldn't be much worse than so. Greg Lewis must be an improvement.
Well, Ron, those who can't do teach. No offense, sir. So he couldn't receive, but maybe
you.
He can coach. Yeah.
Thank you. No offense taken. Ron, the other interesting thing in Jeff Lurie's news conference, he talked again about hiring a personnel chief or personnel person, which we thought was going to be Howie Roseman in charge of all that. But he also said the front office structure is not set. Depends on who they hire and the interviews, although that seems like to me the weird way of doing it, the opposite. You would want to set the structure first and then hire the person, because I think who you hire would depend on what the structure is, but that's just me. But I want to connect that with the other thing that happened was Howie Roseman broke a 13-month silence since he was demoted and gave an interview in which he was incredibly contrite, and as I pointed out in Fish and Chips, you know, took blame for everything that's happened with the Eagles, you know, short of maybe the Kevin Allen and Anton Davis draft picks, which were before he was here. You know, are those two things connected, Howie's contrite attitude and the fact that Jeff Lurie's saying, well, you know, maybe that front office structure is not set in stone in terms of personnel?
Well, it is an interesting take. I mean, Eric, I guess you're believing that Howie's trying to audition for a job and hope that no one else comes in above him, because he's already just been through that. And if he at least owns up and is accountable, he's no fool. Chip Kelly did not own up, and he's out the door. So apparently this owner wants people to own up even if they didn't do a particularly good job. So he's basically kissing the owner's rear end. What else can I say about that? But I wanted to comment on Peterson and the staff. I sure hope that this staff respects Doug Peterson and that Doug Peterson earns their respect, because if this team gets off to the wrong time start, and quite honestly, Eric, you know that I have questioned whether the talent level is going in the wrong direction on this team. I'm pretty pessimistic about that. You've got a bunch of guys on the margins of NFL jobs, quite brutally honestly, who are on this staff. It's an uninspiring, no-name group of people. Yes, Jim Schwartz was a head coach for a number of years. He wasn't all that good in Detroit. And really, I think that the only thing holding it together is that if they're a complete disaster, none of these guys is going to get a particularly good opportunity. They're swept away. And it's almost like they're all in it together is about the only way it's going to work out.
Interesting take on that, Ron. Yeah, that's what I thought. That maybe they're all in it together and you know, either – this job or no job for many of them. I should point out, by the way, just before the show, a little AP moved the story that Pat Shurmur is reportedly going to be added to the Vikings staff with Mike Zimmer, although the position's not exactly clear. They have a running backs coach opening, but it's not exactly clear that's what he'll be, but Pat Shurmur finding work with Minnesota. Josh, I don't know if you were in the program when we started this, if we got to this point, but we talked about the, you know, Jeff Lurie pointing out that, you know, they started the coaching search, you know, compiling these binders of information and talking to people around the league, you know, during the season, long before Kelly was released and fired. And my question for you is, to me, it would seem very hard to do that and do an extensive research and stuff like that within the building and talking to people around the league without Chip Kelly, the players, their agents, hearing about it. And my question to you is, do you think, you know, we saw the Eagles look like they quit in some games and definitely get blown out. Do you think it affected them? Do you think, do you think that there was knowledge around or that this was happening? And if so, do you think it affected their play?
It's a great question. You know, it's surprising that they were doing coaching research during the season. I mean, that's surprising report that came out. I think that if in fact they were doing it, then it certainly could have affected their play, that they were on edge and they were thinking that their jobs are on the line in every game, and Chip Kelly could have been fired earlier on in the season. Jeffrey Lurie mentioned he might have done it mid-season and was thinking about it. And but if it didn't in fact get out, then there's no excuse for how they played. So it's one of those situations where I think for sure it affected their play if in fact, Jeffrey Lurie found the truth that they were doing the coaching search midway through the season or throughout the season looking for different coaches. And I think that it's a situation where you can't do that. I mean, you got to wait till after the season. You got to unless you're really planning on firing Chip Kelly midway through the season and not the second to last game of the season, then it's a different story. But if you're planning on keeping him throughout most of the season, if not the whole season, then you really can't go for coaching searches throughout the year. So I think that was a mistake that Jeffrey Lurie did, and it could have cost them the division.
Okay. That's it for the Eagles talk today. We'll move on to the championship games today, which is the reason we're doing this show early. And, of course, we'll start with the marquee game, which is the Broncos-Patriots game, 3 o'clock this afternoon, which features the interesting matchup of, and I'll credit Ruben Frank for this, Jordan Norwood versus Danny Amendola. Anybody, Gordon, I'll hit with you. Do you know the connection there?
No.
Danny Amendola with the Eagles on their practice squad, signed off in 2009, signed off the practice squad by the St. Louis Rams. We're no longer in St. Louis, but St. Louis Rams. And the Eagles replaced him with free agent receiver Jordan Norwood out of Penn State. Danny Amendola, of course, now with the Patriots, and Jordan Norwood with the Broncos. So there we go, 5.5 years later. Here they are in the championship game for the AFC, former Eagles receivers. While the Eagles receivers struggle. But anyway, that's credit Ruben Frank for that. If you didn't find it interesting, blame Ruben. Let's just start with the Broncos. Of course, it's the 17th meeting in the storied rivalry between Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. Probably the last one, if I had a guess, educated guess. But let's go around. Let's do the AFC game. Make a prediction and explain why you made your pick. Gordon?
It's just I don't know why they keep winning. I mean, the Patriots, with all the injuries they've had. I see Steven Jackson's carrying the ball now. I guess if he gets hurt, they'll go out and sign Gale Sayers for the Super Bowl. But they just find a way to do it, and they're a hard team to go against. On paper, maybe it doesn't add up, but I have to go with New England, and I'll say 28-24.
24, Ron?
Yeah, I like the Patriots to win this game. Brady always seems to get the better of Peyton Manning. He seems to get the best of Eli Manning when it counts. But it just seems to be the Patriots' year yet again, at least to get to the Super Bowl. You know that I like the Panthers to win it all. But I will take the Patriots in a lower scoring game than people might think, 23-17.
Josh?
Well, we're 3-for-3 here. I like the Patriots as well. I always like to look at the line, and the Patriots are a healthy 3-point road favorite. Las Vegas likes the Patriots here as well, and the Broncos have done it with their defense, and they had Brock Osweiler in there, and they had Peyton Manning in there at times, and they were, without the great quarterback play necessarily, they were able to get it done with their defense throughout most of the season, but I just think that the Patriots are going to be too much for them today, and they win this game, I'm going to say 27-20 Patriots.
Yeah, Justin, it's funny, I looked at the line, actually, when I looked at it, I thought it was going to be higher, so it pushed me the other way a little bit. As much as that factor did, I think it's going to be a close game. I think the Patriots. I think people looking at the quarterback matchup are going to go Patriots because I think Brady's clearly a better quarterback than Peyton Manning at this point. But as I run my fish and chips, I think Peyton has sort of reinvented himself a little bit, like a fastball pitcher who's lost his fastball, and it took him a little while to adjust. But I think when he's come back, he hasn't tried to make the throws he can't make anymore. And if you want to call him a game manager, he's a game manager, but he's a great one. And I think they're going to run the ball. And they had 100. C.J. Anderson had 113 yards, 2 touchdowns last time they played the Patriots. Patriots, I think all the linebackers are now going to play, but they have some banged up linebackers. I think 3 of them are hurting. I think the Broncos. I'll break our. We're not going to have a clean sweep here. I'll take Broncos, 24-23. All right, let's go to the other game, Gordon. Panthers, Cardinals.
Yeah, as much as I would like to see a former Temple coach, Bruce Arians, get to the Super Bowl, I don't think they're 100% healthy, and the Panthers really are a solid team. I mean, you have that pair of linebackers. You know, he's the best defensive player in football, possibly, and Luke Kuechly, either him or J.J. Watt. And, the linebacker next to him, Thomas Davis, I mean, between the two of them, they just handle everything sideline to sideline, and that defense is so strong, and Cam Newton is just able to be able to run. He's a threat running and passing, and I just think they're too strong, and I'm gonna go with Carolina, although I think it'll be a tight game, 23-17.
Ron, how about you?
I like the Panthers. I think they're the best team in the NFL in all facets of the game at this point. And I think that their defense is going to cause short fields and or score. I believe they have 5 defensive touchdowns. I think they're all off of interception return. In fact, I think Luke Kuechly has 5 touchdowns, if I'm not mistaken. So I like the Panthers in a blowout, 34-10.
34-10. Decisive. Josh?
Wow. Surprising pick by Ron. Not the Panthers winning, but in a blowout. I'm going to go against those two guys, I guess. I had Arizona winning the Super Bowl over Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, as we did the show last week, was winning and probably should have won that game last week if not for that fumble late in the game. I guess they shouldn't have won the game against the Bengals, and then Karma came back and bit them in the rear end, and they lost the next game. But so obviously the Steelers aren't going to be in the Super Bowl. But as much as I would see Carolina and New England in a rematch, I'd like to see Carolina get their revenge and beat New England in the Super Bowl. I agree with Ron. I think Carolina has been the best team all year long, 15-1. I can't argue with that, but at the same time, they didn't play the toughest of schedules. And I just think that Arizona is a really strong team. I like them a lot, and I think that Arizona wins this game. I think it's going to be a close game also, though, And I think that Carson Palmer has played, and both Carson Palmer and Cam Newton have both played MVP status. I think Cam Newton's probably going to win the MVP if I had a guess. But I think Carson Palmer's been right there as well. Not having some of their players have banged up some injuries is going to hurt Arizona a little bit, but I just think overall it's rare you see two road teams win in a championship game, so I'm a little weary or wary of that. I don't know if it's going to happen. I, if I had to pick between the two home teams, I would pick Carolina over Denver, but I like the two road teams to win. I like New England and Arizona in the Super Bowl.
Okay, well,
so
my
score prediction, I'll go with Arizona 30, Carolina 27.
Oh, sorry. Okay, Josh. Sorry to jump the gun on you there. I'm going to go with the Panthers, along with Ron and Gordon. Since they were 3-8-1 at one point last season, and Ron Rivera's job was in jeopardy, they are 21-2, and that's really hard to argue with. And I do think Cardinals losing to a couple defensive starters, three of them during the latter part of the season. I also think Carson Palmer, since he hurt his finger on Connor Barwin's helmet while they were blowing out the Eagles. Has not quite been the same quarterback in terms of accuracy. And then you want to throw in the travel nightmare because of the snow. And I'm taking the Panthers, not quite as handily as Ron did, but 30-20. So we got 3-1 for Panthers and 3-1 for Patriots. We'll see how it turns out later today. We're going to try to get this in before we switch over to archive. Sixers reached the midpoint of their season, and I put up my grades for the Sixers at the midterm. And I'll give you guys some names. Maybe we'll go around twice. Tell me what grade you have for this player and why. So we'll start with, I guess, we're up to Gordon. Jahlil Okafor.
Well, I guess we got to remove the immaturity off the court and look on the court, and I think he's given them a pretty good start considering his age. I mean, only played 1 year of college basketball. I'm going to go B+.
Oh, Gordon, that's what I gave him. Oh, I gave him an F for off the court, but B+ is good.
Right.
Correct. Ron, Nerlens Noel. We might have lost Ron again. Josh, Nerlens Noel.
Nerlens Noel, he's been a little bit of a disappointment, I think, this season. He had a really good year last year, and I don't know if he fits with Okafor as well. I'll give him a B.
I went B-, and I think you hit on the key, although that's not his fault, that he and Okafor absolutely do not mesh. And we saw that in the double overtime game against the Knicks, the Sixers lost, is Okafor had 20 points, and he didn't play after the third quarter because Nerlens Noel and Ish Smith were working so well together, and they couldn't put them back on the court together. At least Brett Brown didn't feel he could. Ron, are you there?
I am. I'm sorry, and I would confirm C-. Sorry, Noel.
Okay.
I think we're pretty much all in the same range. His rebounding is actually pretty decent, but maybe that's because he misses so many shots.
Okay. Well, I was going to give you another guy. So how about Nick Stauskas?
Well, they got him for very little. This is all I can say. If the expectations were based on where he was drafted, I'd give him a D. If it was based on what they traded to acquire him, maybe a C+.
Okay, I gave him a D, by the way. We're on the same page. Gordon, Ish Smith.
Oh, Ish Smith has been the start at his mix to drink for the Sixers, to make them at least competitive in certain games. So I got to give Ish Smith you can't give anybody an A on that team, so I got to give him a B+.
Okay, I went with B. Josh, we'll give you two to fill it out here. Robert Covington.
Robert Covington, I'll give him a B.
Okay, and then the one I really want to ask about, Brett Brown.
Brett Brown, he's been underwhelming. I mean, I thought this team was going to be much more competitive, and I talked about them being in the 20-win range. So I'll give Brett Brown C-.
Wow. A pretty low one for Brett Brown. I came in there at C+, actually, so not that much different. All right, that's going to be it for our live show. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the games today. Check out PhillyFanatics.com. Gordon's column's up, my column's up, my fish and chips column's up. We have the conference championship previews. We're going to have Flyers grades up, which we're going to talk about after we move into archives. We'll be doing Flyers grades. There's a Royal Rumble preview as well, which is tonight after, I guess it's in the middle of the NFC championship game. So that's it for this week. For those listening live, thank you for listening. Check out PhillyFanatics.com, and we will talk to you next week. All right, for those in archive, now we're going to move on to the Flyers, which I have not posted the Flyers midterm grades yet, but I'm going to tonight. They're written already, so you guys don't have the advantage of seeing what I picked when I ask you a question. So, Ron, let's start with you on the Flyers here. I'll give you a player. Give me a grade and a reason. Claude Giroux.
Oh, boy. I don't know if we've gotten to a point with Claude Giroux where the expectations are just higher than what he's able to deliver. Or maybe it's simply that there aren't enough other guys on the team to take the load off him, and other teams just manage to key on him so much. I have a hard time figuring out whether his game has dropped, whether he's overhyped, or whether he just needs to be on a better team. But I can't give him any higher than a C.
A C? And that's not for captain.
Based on expectations. I mean, as a player randomly in the league, he's still maybe a top 30 player in the league, but he's not a top five player as he was built to be.
Okay. And no, interesting thing. A tough grade. Josh, I'll give you more of a layup here. Shane Gostisbehere.
He's you know what? I'll give him a B.
A B? Oh, my God, we have tough graders here. What tough graders here? I'm glad my students are happy that you're not grading their tests.
I'll give him a B plus.
Okay. I have Shane Gostisbehere with an A. So let me just make sure I'm not. Gordon, give me the Gostisbehere grade first, and then I'll give you somebody else.
A minus, I guess. I mean, nobody, an A, you'd have to be Bobby Orr, but I mean, he's been, he's sparked the team since he's been there. I mean, I get excited every time he's on the ice just to see what he's going to generate. So I think he's, and I'm so excited to see about what he generates in the future. So,
okay.
A minus.
Yeah. All right, so we'll get some more. Let's give you your own guy, though. Jake Voracek.
Well, that's a tough one because he really has struggled to score goals, but I think he's played pretty well. The thing that drives me nuts with him is that he just doesn't shoot enough. You know, the game the other night, he had a 2-on-1 in the first 10 seconds of the game, and he should have shot the puck, and he tried to pass it, and they ended up losing that game, you know. But he really is, you know, he's one of their most skilled players, and he kept working hard, and I'll give him credit for that. And he's starting to click now, and he played on different lines, and he's played different positions, left wing instead of right wing. I'm still going to have to go with a B for him.
A B. That's right where I came in, actually. Ron, Sean Couturier.
Well, I think the expectations on Couturier have been dampened year over year, and this year he's risen to a level that maybe we'd started to give up on. So as a result, again, based on expectations, a B+.
A B plus. Okay, I was in there. I gave him an A minus in the end. Interesting, Ron. The two guys I asked you about were guys I went back and forth on, Giroux and Couturier. And one of my thoughts was actually that the wingers have played better with Couturier than they did in terms of offensive production than they have with Giroux. Most notably, Voracek and Simmons for a while, but most notably Shen and Raffel, since they've been moved with Couturier, have produced much better than they did with Giroux. So, which inflated my Couturier grade and maybe should have lowered my Giroux grade a little bit. Speaking of those guys, Josh, last one, Braden Shen.
Braden Shen, it's a tough one. He's played well at times and has struggled at other times, so I'm going to go kind of right in the middle of the pack. I'll give him a B.
Yeah, he's inconsistent. You hit right on it. B- I gave him, but his inconsistency is what gets him there. Gordon, Matt Reed.
You're saving that one for me, huh?
I did.
You know, I guess my expectation level has dropped a little for Matt Reed. I still would like to see him get a little more time with other skilled players. I'd like to see him get a little more time on the power play. I think we'd see more offensive production, but we don't. And for what he's given so far, I pretty much would have to go with a C+.
That's right where I have him, C+. Well, now I'm feeling
a
little better.
I want to jump in on that one.
Go ahead, Ron.
I'm sorry. With Vinny LeCavalier shipped out now, R.J. Umberger is the worst value on this team, but Matt Reed is not far off. I think C+ is a very generous grade.
Okay. Tough grader. So let's give you the last one, Ron, and that is Dave Hakstol.
I want to see what Dave Hakstol does with guys like Provorov and Sanheim, and I'm sure he's salivating to get a hold of those guys in the next year or two. That'll be a realistic time to grade him. I'm going to give him a B minus, and that's also because I've probably been given to work with. The team's probably a little better than what I expected in the standings. I will have to rant about one thing, though. They came home after a really good stretch in November and lost a home game to Columbus, a lousy team in the league. I think it was December 5th. They did the same thing. They were in a great stretch of games and lost a home game to Toronto, was going nowhere this past week. Every time it looks like they're actually going to make it to that playoff line, they seem to lose to a team they should beat. And that's a criticism of Hextall that I'd like to see them get ready and get up for every single game, if at all possible.
Ron, this ties into that. I mean, one of my criticisms in my ranking, I rated them a little higher than you did, but you did it by game, and I said their first periods are so bad. I think the game against Pittsburgh was the first time they had scored two goals in the first period in something like 34 games or something ridiculous like that. And I think that does speak to the coach, although I give him high marks for, one, being willing to bench veterans, which like Matt Reed, which he did, and sending messages, which some rookie coaches are not, you know, a little reluctant to do. And also, you know, he was dealt a pretty tough deck, even handling the 8-man defense rotation for a while, where two guys have to sit is tough. And I think he's done a pretty good job, and maybe is ahead of where, Flyers a little ahead of where most people thought they were. So I'm with you on most of that. Time for final thoughts. So, Josh, why don't you lead us off in final thoughts this week?
I'm going to go back to football on the AFC Championship game. I think that we're seeing Manning Brady Bowl number 17, and whether you're rooting for the Broncos, you're rooting for the Patriots, or you pick the Broncos, you pick the Patriots, whatever the case may be, I think we just got to sit back, watch, and enjoy this one. As you said, it could be the last matchup. Peyton Manning could be retiring after this season. It could be the last matchup between these two great quarterbacks, easily the two greatest quarterbacks of their generation, and potentially two of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Brady, I have listed as number one, and Peyton Manning, not far behind him. Peyton Manning's definitely in the top five, maybe not number two overall. So, you know, obviously you got to throw Joe Montana and John Elway in that mix, and even Dan Marino. But Peyton Manning and Brady, two of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, going up against each other. Obviously, Peyton Manning kind of downplayed it in his post-game report. He talks about it's not him versus Brady, it's the Broncos versus the Patriots. But obviously everyone's going to be watching these two quarterbacks, what they can do against the defenses. And Tom Brady and the Patriots, their fifth straight AFC Championship game. They're 2-2 in their last four. 2 years ago they lost the Broncos, so it's a little bit of a revenge game against the Broncos, see if they can get into the back into the Super Bowl. Tom Brady's 4-2 in Super Bowls, Peyton Manning 1-2 in Super Bowls. And Tom Brady has dominated both the regular season and postseason matchups between him and Peyton Manning. So we'll see if Peyton Manning can go 2-for-2 in the last 3 years, or if Tom Brady is going to make it 1-1 between these two quarterbacks. But just a delight to watch these two quarterbacks go up against each other, and we're going to see that again today.
Yeah, good points, Josh. Really, too, I mean, people can argue where they rank, but it's pretty tough to kick either one of those guys out of the top five of all time. They're in there somewhere, both of them. Gordon, your final thought?
Yeah, I'm going back to the Eagles, and I think one point we didn't touch on was, everybody was saying that the Eagles didn't seem to have a plan, and I found that a little ridiculous. That, you know, what is really a very large company, wouldn't have a plan, and now we're criticizing them for having too much of a plan too soon, and having 25 names and volumes of information on them. So they did have a plan all along, and I just hope, as I try to wrap my mind around the Sam Bradford situation, where they're kind of damned if they do and damned if they don't, that they also have a plan. Because the more I think about it, and the pros and the cons of keeping him at a high salary or letting him go and having to start with a Chase Daniel, who's a free agent, who was a backup quarterback in Kansas City, would be a likely kind of guy they'd bring in. It kind of makes my head want to explode. And when I think about, some of the guys Eagles want to re-up, the Vinny Currys and Zach Ertz's and Lane Johnson's and some of those guys that they want to renegotiate deals with and extend, to keep here, and how they're going to do that and manage the cap, and the lack of foresight with some of the moves that Chip Kelly made. I want to hop a plane to San Francisco as soon as the airport reopens and kick him in his fat little butt.
All right. Certainly built to the end there. Before I forget, Gordon, we definitely will be talking Eagles personnel in the coming weeks. I don't know, the next week or the week after, we'll definitely talk about, who should stay and who should go. Ron, your final thought.
Well, I'll continue on from the thought of the coaching staff and the we're all in this together to save our NFL careers kind of thing. I can't help but be pessimistic about Doug Peterson and the whole crew. And he's getting, in my view, dealt with an even worse hand than Dave Hackstall. The Flyers are on the way up, and I just can't see the Eagles being on the way up. I'm just not seeing it, and I really do think that with Pat Shurmur being handed his walking papers, Shane Bradford will be before too long as well, which leaves me thinking that Doug Peterson is cannon fodder for a struggling team. And it'll be another cycle where Jeffrey Lurie will be looking for the next hot commodity in about 2 to 3 years, assuming that his personnel guys can start to string together some better drafts.
Although, let me facetiously throw out there, maybe Doug Peterson's going to be a player coach, and he can be the quarterback. And he certainly would have been.
I don't know. The only thing he has going for him is he probably knows that there is overtime in the NFL, and there can be a tie. In the regular season after 15
But if he's a player coach, though, he looks like a much better choice than Tom Coughlin, though, I would say, for those who wanted Tom Coughlin. All right, the my final thought, I will just stick with the Eagles just for a split second here for a minute and say that I wish Jeffrey – I don't know which business seminar Jeffrey Lurie attended, but I'm tired of hearing business buzzwords like collaboration and accountability – and every other business buzzword he threw out there. I mean, it's almost like listening to Josh Harris and Sam Hinkie. I hear the words and I'm like, you know, are they running a financial investment firm or are they running a football team? Which is it? Let's stick to football and get rid of the business buzzwords. But there's so much going on with football, and I was going to do what Josh said, talk about Manning and Brady, but I thought somebody else would take that, and Josh did. So I was ready with. Every couple of months, I got to remind people what a jerk LeBron James is, and this is a good week to do it. It gets kind of lost in all the football stuff that's going on, and we get the Flyers and Sixers and the snow. But the Cavaliers fired their coach this week, David Blatt, who had something like a 7-11 winning percentage in his year and a half in the NBA, and just a great article, which I have a link to from my Fish and Chips column, to Adrian Wojnarowski, who's from Yahoo Sports, who might be the most plugged-in NBA writer in the country. And basically LeBron James has taken over the Cavaliers, or tried to, with his sports agency, which represents athletes. Basically they wanted to bring in Mark Jackson, former Golden State coach, who almost ruined that team before they got rid of him and then won a championship probably a year later than they should have. Why they want Mark Jackson? Well, Mark Jackson signed on as a client with the sports agency that LeBron runs. And they're almost like they're the mafia, and they've taken over a failing business, and now they're going to run it to the ground. They're going to run it for their own benefit, and then when they're done with it, they're going to dump it in the trash. This is what LeBron James does. This is what LeBron James is. He didn't go back to Cleveland to win a championship for the people of Cleveland. He went back to Cleveland to run that franchise and help his business, and that's what he's all about, his business. And then he had the nerve to feign ignorance. When they asked him about Dave Blatt being fired, he said he didn't know till everybody else found out. If you believe that one, you know, I don't know what to tell you. LeBron James is a creep. He's a great player. I have unbelievable respect for him as a player. He is a creep. He has bad motivations. He's running that franchise for his own self-benefit, for his financial benefit, and for his own glory, not to help the people of Cleveland or the Cavaliers, and they are fools for believing in LeBron James. That's it for this week's show. For Gordon Glantz, Josh Landsberg, Ron Ofer, I am Eric Fisher. Have a great week. Check out PhillyFanatics.com, and we will talk to you next Sunday.